Good morning, everybody. It is October 13th, 2021. This is the ADK Homeroom Podcast. I am your host, Frank. What better season to talk about Buffy the Vampire Slayer than Halloween? We are having a splendid fall here in the Adirondacks. Leaves burning gold and brown and red out there, flying through the air like little orange fires. At soccer practice last night, I was sitting down on the grass after them, after practice with them, little kids. I could have sat there all night listening to them tell me about their Halloween costumes. They are so excited. Maybe this will be the year that it doesn't rain or snow on Halloween up here in the High Peaks region of the Adirondacks. We will see. We will see. Maybe we'll finally get that. I don't know. I vastly prefer snow to rain, of course. Snow's not even that bad on Halloween. Just get those mittens on. And then when you have in your first piece of candy, you get those little pieces of your wool mittens mixed in with the chocolate. That's the taste of Halloween. A lot of kids still love Buffy. Who doesn't love Buffy, right? Buffy is an instant classic. It's probably, I don't know. I think it's probably the best television show ever made. I think I can name 10 episodes of Buffy that are as good as, put it this way, I think I can name 10 episodes of Buffy that no other show has more than 5-6 episodes as good as those 10 episodes of Buffy, right? It's just incredible. Even if you don't think it's the best show of all time, it still is an extremely important show for a lot of reasons. And we have had a lot of interest in this podcast in my episode about the Stan Lee Revolution. Stan Lee, one of the two most underrated literary figures of the 20th century, and Stan Lee's revolution informed Buffy and Joss Whedon. Buffy and Joss Whedon were absolutely shaped by the Stan Lee revolution, as all great literature is shaped by what has come before it. And following these parallels can really help us appreciate Buffy, can really help us get more out of Buffy. Can you enjoy Buffy without knowing all this stuff? Well, sure, you absolutely can. But you'll enjoy it even more if you do understand this stuff. So that's going to be our goal today, then. Our goal today is to trace the character of Buffy as a literary character and find her roots, see how this character has developed from the Stan Lee Revolution and the entire Western canonical, the entire Western canon, the tradition of the hero in the Western canon. So, of course, we'll touch on Joseph Campbell's hero's journey and see how that doesn't relate and the ways that it does relate, and look at the hero where it was in antiquity, where it was through the Dark Ages, 1,000 years of crap from 400 to 1400, and then look at how the heroes developed after that and see where Buffy fits into all these pieces, all these schemes, all these places, I should say. Let's get to the history part in a second. First, we need to know about Buffy's character. So what are the defining features of the Buffy character? How does she emerge from the Stan Lee Revolution to take her place as this amazing, iconic, very important hero in the canon? Well, first of all, you need to understand that she is chosen, right? And this is very important. She is chosen. She does not choose her destiny herself. This allows her to fit into Joseph Campbell's hero's journey in one way. There are other ways where she doesn't fit, but in one way she can refuse the call, right? There's the hero's call, and then there's the refusal of the call. So in that way, she absolutely does fit into it, and she's able to say, no, not for me, just like Frodo, just like Luke Skywalker. She can say, I don't choose this. I don't accept it. And no, not going to happen. So then you see that as a result of her refusing the call, she has these narrative pathways opened up for her, right? And she can show a character arc where she's going to develop the ability to accept her fate. This is like Spider-Man. We'll get to the how Stan Lee fits, I guess, at the end. I keep wanting to jump forward to it, but I've got to hold on. We'll get to that in a second. Let's just establish what Buffy's character is for the moment, right? The character is not someone who's chosen her own fate. She has had it chosen for her. Next, her powers are supernatural. This is important for a lot of reasons. She is strong beyond reality. So it gives you that element of fantasy. Fantasy, of course, is the mode of storytelling where you can separate things from their natural and their necessary pieces in reality. And fantasy, you can separate these pieces that in reality you maybe can't separate. For example, you can have a picnic without bugs in fantasy. You can have a magic world where there are resurrection spells and there are flying spells, but no one's going around resurrecting people and flying people except for the heroes in the story. Everybody else is living in castles, and somehow these spells don't actually make a difference in the world that you see compared to medieval Earth. So you can separate these things in fantasy. And when you separate them, right, that's a tool. You can highlight them. You can point out, I'm going to talk about this piece without talking about that piece. This is a very useful mode of thought. We talked about it the other day when we were talking about philosophical friction and how you can focus on one idea in philosophy without focusing on another idea. Just like Galileo in physics made tremendous advances by focusing on movement without friction, leaving that idea of friction behind and just focusing on the ideal case. And fantasy gives us that opportunity in literature. We can focus on just one thing and we could ignore the friction. We could ignore the non-important things. We can focus on the ideal. Is that the way things exist in reality? No, it isn't. But that doesn't mean that it's not a very useful thought exercise, a useful piece of art to have. It can still tell us something. It can still be relevant to our world. But in our world, we may have to combine it with something else. It still doesn't mean that it's not useful to look at it in isolation. So sometimes you see people in literary circles poo-pooing fantasy, looking down upon fantasy. That is poor. That is a poor decision. Fantasy, speculative fiction in general, but specifically fantasy right now, can have a lot to say about our world. And that's very, very similar to the way that I keep coming back to this example of Galileo can study ideal physics, can study physics without friction. And then after you understand that, then you can start to look at the complications with friction. So Buffy is definitely a fantasy character. Next thing to notice about Buffy's character, and this is not unrelated, she is a girl, right? And this is a fantasy in some sense because, you know, in real life, girls can't fight like that. They just can't. They really can't. And you need to acknowledge that if you're going to be honest and you're going to look at Buffy through the proper lens. Example would be that Zelenska-LaRosa fight up there. If you're out there saying, well, a well-trained female could beat a weak male. Yeah, that's definitely true. A well-trained female could beat a weak male, but that is not the common situation. That is certainly not the normal situation. And if the male is not weak, he's not going to lose. Go look at that Zelenska-LaRosa fight out there. LaRosa is very trained. Zelenska's not trained at all. It looks to me like LaRosa might outweigh Zelenska too. And he clearly wins. This is an example of gaslighting, by the way, just like with Parasite or with Platform. This fight, people sometimes say the girl won. I mean, watch the first part. Clearly the guy wins. And then he just like, he lets her up and he's like, okay, well now we can do whatever. But yeah, I obviously just won. It wasn't even a contest either. All right, so that is a fantasy, right? That the female can fight just as well as the trained male, that the female could fight against these monsters. And obviously, extremely important that Buffy is a female for what the show is about, what the show is saying. It's great messages about female empowerment. It's great statements. And its place, really, at the start of this feminization of society that has taken place over the last, you know, 4 or 5 decades. And Buffy didn't come in until the middle of that, but it really provided a touchstone. Like art does, it provided a great example of these abstract ideas that have been swirling around, and then they sort of coalesced and took a form that we can visibly, audibly relate to here in the figure of Buffy. So that's the third thing to note about Buffy's character is obviously that she's female. We'll get into how this relates to the Stan Lee Revolution, as I said, in a minute. We're just noting the properties of her character right now. Next, very social. Her character is extremely social. She has the Scooby Gang. If you leave the gang, you're bad, like Willow in season 6. You're out. You know, it's synonymous exclusion from the gang, exile. It's synonymous with being evil. Almost. And as a social character, communication, extremely important. Communication is at the heart of what goes on in this show, right? You have Oz trying to communicate in so many different ways with Willow at different points. You have almost everyone's top 3 episode, Hush, all about communication and different forms of communication. Just the diction that Buffy has is absolutely the not the character, but the show, the diction of the characters in the show is startling, stunning, beautiful, delicious, the way that they speak, their word choice. So the show is all about being social, all about the communication within the social gang. Next, the penultimate quality that we want to talk about here with Buffy is that she has continuity. It is hard, almost impossible for people these days, growing up on Netflix, for kids these days, growing up on Netflix, growing up on shows that have episodic story arcs, it's almost impossible for them to understand, it's almost impossible for me to understand when I look back at it, how disconnected episodes in television shows were up until Buffy, really. You had shows where in one episode, maybe, you know, the garage would fall apart and the car would tear through the garage. And then in the next episode, oh, the garage is fine. Everybody's happy. You know, in Happy Days, they went out, they went to the West Coast, they water skied, they came back, never talked about it again. It's as if it never happened. The episodes were completely divorced from each other and there was no continuity to them. But Buffy, and obviously the connections to Stanley are obvious here, Buffy was a character with continuity. And that allowed her to have development and growth. We'll get to that in a second. But that's quality to have, to note that she has continuity. And extremely rare. That's why it stands up so well. One reason why it stands up so well, it looks like, it acts like, it plays like a modern TV show. Try to go back and do that with another show, you know, the A-Team with these heroes, or try to do that with, you know, the Bill Bixby, Bruce Banner, Incredible Hulk show. It doesn't stand up. It doesn't even seem like the same art form because they don't have that continuity. Next quality of Buffy, number 5 quality, she is a leader. I think this is the number 6, actually, excuse me. Number 6 quality, the last quality, she is a leader. She's the undisputed Queen Bee. This is tragic in some sense because it increases her loneliness. And, you know, she has to sort of turn outside of her gang to find her king. And that has some tragic consequences at various points, just like Stanley character. But that's the last quality notice, is that she is a leader. She is at the top of the hierarchy of the Scooby gang. Giles, you know, one of the great things about this show is that it accepts that Giles is not at the top. He's not at the hierarchy. And, you know, one of the great themes of the show is that Buffy keeps taking on these adult responsibilities way too early before, you know, I shouldn't say too early, but way earlier than a lot of other high school kids at that time and still now were taking on responsibilities. It was the anti-infantilization show. It showed that Buffy is growing up and that she is capable of taking on these things. Just, you know, just like women are capable of taking on things. There were pains along the way, of course, but that was one of the great themes of the show. Growing up quickly and being able to take on all these leadership responsibilities, taking over Giles' position as leader of the group. And then, of course, you know, you knew it, right? You knew it. As soon as really in that episode with Faith in season 4, but definitely when Dawn appeared on the scene and Buffy had to be the mother figure to Dawn, you knew that Buffy was now the mom and that Christine was going away. Or Joyce, I should say. I said Christine Sutherland, but Joyce, the character name. And you knew that she was going to pass away and that Buffy would be taking on that leadership role. That's what the show was about, folks. All right, so those are the six qualities of Buffy right there. She's chosen. Her powers are supernatural. She's a girl. She is social. And she has continuity. And she is a leader. So those are six qualities of the character. And we'll get to them and in a second. But first, let's say what the Stanley Revolution was. The Stanley Revolution, I did cover this in another episode. You can just go back and search 80K Homeroom, Stanley Revolution. But in brief, the Stanley Revolution was this turn from the Greek hero archetype to the Christian hero archetype. In Greek mythology and Roman that came after that, right? You always had this hero who had powers of a divine origin, supernatural origin, somewhat like Buffy there. But the Greek hero, all of his powers were an unquestioned boon. Hercules didn't go around saying, oh man, I wish I wasn't strong. This is horrible that I'm so strong. I didn't want to be strong. I just wanted to sit on the beach and fish and go to some plays by Aeschylus. No, that's not what Hercules did, right? Hercules reveled in being strong. It was an undisputed good. And you might have character flaws, right? It was great art. It was good art. You have maybe pride, hubris, and that is definitely a character flaw, and that is shown in them as being poor. But their powers are separate from their character flaws. Their powers are separate from what hurts them. Their powers are separate from what causes them pain. And just like Superman, it's something external. Just like Hercules, it's another god, or, well, he's not exactly a god, but it's the gods. It's something external to them that is really causing them the most pain. And then you contrast that with the Christian hero archetype, where what causes the Christian hero the most pain is the Christian hero's powers themselves, right? Why is Jesus Christ put up on the cross? Why does he suffer? It's because he is the Son of God, right? That is why he is put up there. He has these supernatural powers. He has these miraculous abilities. And for that very reason, he is excluded from society. He feels the pain of loneliness. He is tortured internally. He is ultimately sacrificed because of his powers. In the Greek archetype, anything, any pain, any suffering is not because of the powers. It is external. It is a challenge to the powers. It arises from some other source. You can have pride without being super strong. You can have kryptonite without being, you know, the Superman. You can have poison, I should say, without being Superman. You can have these threats. But the Christian archetype, the idea here is that the pain comes from the powers themselves. And that's what Stan Lee did, right? Do you see that? I'm just doing this briefly in this episode, but Stan Lee's revolution was that the pain in his characters, the suffering in his characters came from the powers themselves. Why does Spider-Man feel so much pain? Because he has these superpowers and he didn't use them to stop the guy who murdered Uncle Ben, right? That's why Spider-Man forevermore, ever since that origin story, is going to feel that guilt. Hulk, look at Hulk. Why does Hulk have so much pain? What is this internal struggle? Literally an internal struggle. It's because he is super strong, he is also super savage. Because he has these powers, part and parcel of these powers is this threat of loss of control. His powers are not an unmitigated good, right? So that's the Stan Lee revolution. If you want to get more into it, you can go listen to my episode about that. I discuss it in more detail. So how does Buffy fit into this? She is a Stan Lee revolution character. And she's definitely more than that, right? Joss Whedon has created an amazing character here. She's not just a copy. She is a new great work of art herself. But she fits into the Stan Lee revolution because Buffy's powers are also the source of her pain, right? Buffy feels this tremendous isolation. She feels this hopelessness at times because she is the Slayer. She is cut off from society. She can't have a normal life. You don't see characters, you know, before the Stan Lee revolution. You don't see Hercules sitting down there and around saying, oh man, I wish I could have a normal life. I really don't want to go to Olympus. That's terrible up there. I don't want to live like the gods up there. I just want a normal life down here on the mountains with the olive trees. You don't see that, but that's what Buffy does all the time. She just wants to go to high school. She just wants to have a normal life. She wants to reject this supernatural world because, like in Stan Lee's characters, she wants a normal life. She doesn't see that her powers are absolutely for good. She wishes she didn't have them, right? And Tolkien also, I should throw out a bone to Tolkien also. He had the same sort of a turn, right? And Frodo wants to put down the ring. But here's the thing. Here's the thing that separates Tolkien from the Stan Lee revolution is that in the Stan Lee revolution, and Tolkien would say this too. Tolkien said he wasn't really writing a novel, right? He was writing a saga. He was writing an epic. But in the Stan Lee revolution, the characters still go on to be supernatural heroes. And in Tolkien, right, Frodo does not become a supernatural hero. The superpowers are for other people. It is a different sort of a story. And that's why Buffy fits into the Stan Lee revolution and not into this epic, which is classic, of course, but it is Tolkien is separate from this tradition that we're talking about here. Similarities, but separate. So Buffy, the first female Stan Lee character, the first and most obvious reason we can see is that just like the Christian archetype that embodied the Stan Lee revolution is that Buffy's powers are the source of her passion, her pain, her suffering, right? And also literally her passion in some cases, right? She chooses to be with Angel for the first three episodes before they had to spin Angel out, first three seasons, excuse me, before they decided to spin Angel out. And she stuck with the vampires for a lot of complicated reasons, but normal guys are just not going to work for her. Riley proved that in season 4 in more ways than one. And this is similar to Spider-Man, for example, needing a secret identity. And Spider-Man's powers constantly getting in the way of him trying to have a normal life with MJ. It doesn't work out for him because he is Spider-Man. Being Spider-Man, having these powers, does not help him. It is causing him problems. And that's the same thing with Buffy. Now, you can make an interesting observation here about the quality of 20th century life. You can look at this and say, wow, we're having an interesting statement here by our art. It seems to be saying that these characters are wishing just for a normal life, and normal life is so good nowadays here in the 20th century. At the end of the 20th century, normal life is so amazing that it's even better than being super strong and being super fast and being super quick. We would rather, our heroes would rather give up those superpowers and just live in normal 20th century world than to have those superpowers. Interesting, very interesting statement about the end of the 20th century and the world that we're living in. Now, other ways that Buffy fits into the Stanley Revolution that we should discuss. Let's go through those character points that we started with one by one here and see how they fit in with what Stanley has done. So first, she's chosen. And this is the case, right, with most of the Marvel heroes, right? They have this burden thrust upon them. The Hulk is exposed to gamma rays. Fantastic Four gets those cosmic rays. Spider-Man gets bitten. They didn't choose these things. They didn't go out of their way to do it. Stephen Strange has the car accident and he tries to come back to be a surgeon, but fate takes him along a different path. And that's the first trait. Second one, her powers are supernatural in origin. Well, yeah, sure. That's just like a Marvel character superhero power, right? These are supernatural powers. They're above and beyond. And again, this is where it differs from the Tolkien stance or the Tolkien take on this Christian hero archetype. So supernatural powers that are very, very, very effective. Number three. Now, this one, number three, Buffy is a girl. This is not in the Stanley Revolution. This is Joss Whedon's genius. This is a continuation and an advancement from the Stanley Revolution. It clearly grows straight out of this, what Marvel heroes were doing, but they didn't go this far, right? The first Buffy movie was in 1992. You did have Lara Croft, right, in like 1996, the year before Buffy came out. But then the Buffy series was 1997, and it was really the first time, the first major female character who fits all these traits, a landmark. And of course, it perfectly embodied what was going on in society, in Western society at that time with the feminization of our culture. So Buffy really just another Stanley character, but the great advancement of Joss Whedon, and it was a great advancement, a female character. And nowadays, of course, you can't walk into the young adult section or the fantasy section of the bookstore without seeing a Buffy character, right? Everything in there. Selena Sardothian in the Sarah Maas trilogy, or a Jay Kristoff's great series, Nevernight. You can't get away from female assassins, supernaturally powered characters whose powers are also the source of their pain and their tragedy. You just can't get away from it. So not only can we see that Joss Whedon pushed on this Marvel idea, this tradition, this revolution that Stanley started, but it's inspired many, many, many copies. I wouldn't say that these assassin characters have advanced the revolution, literally speaking, but they are certainly proof that Buffy was a landmark, iconic figure. just to keep going through the character traits here, she is social, and that fits into this revolution that we're talking about clearly, because as great as Spider-Man was, as great as the Hulk was, another amazing piece of the Stanley Revolution was that he was able to create these fantastic super teams like the Fantastic Four and the Avengers. And as you see in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, that's how you build it. You start with the individual characters and then you build up to the team. And we see the same exact thing in Buffy, that Buffy started off. She was a little bit more of a loner and she wanted to work alone, but then she had to realize that she works best with the team, and the Scooby Gang became more and more and more important. And by the end, she has this super team of Slayers and she goes on offense and she goes down into the Hellmouth there. So she built her team around her, very social, just like the Marvel characters before that. Next character trait, I said she had continuity. You know, growing up in the 1970s, 1980s, I kept watching these TV episodes and I kept looking at my comic books and I kept saying, TV shows, why aren't you like comic books? This makes no sense. You have episode in October that doesn't relate to your episode in September. These characters act like they have no idea what has happened to them before. They have no continuity. There's no progression of the story. There's no arc. There's no development. But comic books are doing it, right? There were classic comic book story arcs, just amazing stuff. I have, for example, Wolverine, Frank Miller's original Wolverine Limited Series 1 through 4. Little bit proud that I have that. So you saw these things in comic books all the time, this continuity, and it was obvious that TV should be doing it, but they just weren't. And I don't know why. I still don't know why. But it took until 1997, really, and Buffy to do that. There were a couple episodes of Facts of Life, believe it or not, that had some continuity to them back in the day. And there were a couple other scattered things here and there. But I guess maybe they thought continuity was for the ghetto of the soap opera. I don't know. That's a topic for another podcast. But that was our fifth quality of Buffy, is that she has continuity. And clearly that relates to the Stanley Revolution. And finally, number six quality of Buffy, she is a leader. Well, on the one hand, that certainly fits with what Marvel Comics was doing. They were talking about leaders. They were talking about heroes. They were talking about role models, and you were supposed to follow them and be like them, or you could. And on the other hand, that represents an advancement from the Revolution, just like our point about Buffy being a girl was an advancement. And not that there's anything wrong with male heroes either, but we should have both, right? And this was an advancement to have a female leader. Sure, there were some Marvel characters, not especially major ones, that were female, but they really weren't the leaders in any respect. And so that was an advancement from the revolution that was going on in comic books and literature with Stan Lee. And I'm going to start wrapping it up here, but I hope you can see how important the Stanley Revolution was. It's not just important because Marvel Cinematic Universe has taken over movie theaters, you know, along with video games. Movies are probably the premier art form of our age right now, along with TV shows too. So it's the Stanley Revolution is dominant in that field, right? But it's not just important for that. It's also important because it informed this amazing character, Buffy, who is, like I said at the start of the show, Buffy the TV show is probably the greatest TV show made. You can just look at all the Buffy studies that are going on as evidence of that. No other show has the rich academic tradition already. It's only, what, 20, 25 years old. Already the rich academic tradition that Buffy does. It's so deep, it's so wonderful, it's so amazing, and I've just tried to point out to you a little bit today how it takes its place in and how it proceeds from the Marvel Comics Stan Lee Revolution of the 20th century. That's going to do it for today, folks. Remember, please, to subscribe. Also, remember, please, to find me on ADK Homeroom at ADK Homeroom on Twitter, and let me know what you think. Feel free to slide into my DMs if you prefer to do that. I am new to this podcast journey after I have been exiled from the classroom tier. So let me know what your feedback is. I appreciate it so much. Take care.